How about we get started? Thank you for joining us, Jameson. Let's start with a quick intro. I'm definitely a big name on the panel right here. Want to get, you know, who these people are. We'll start with Jameson and work our way down.
So I'm Jameson Lopp, and work for CASA, and we sell these things that all-in-one lightning solution, and yeah, I love guns.
Is it true that you killed Mike in space?
Yeah.
You did kill Mike in space?
Scammer, yeah.
Didn't he shoot you?
Yeah, he did.
I mean, Mike?
Yeah.
Oh. Wait, hey! we have a... Oh, my God, there's a Doppler twin. I don't know what this is. There's two Jamesons.
Sure you don't want to take over? I've already been on stage multiple times, and I want to give you as much screen time as possible.
Hey. Welcome to the panel.
It turns out there are some much more fascinating things happening in the regulatory space than in the permissionless space. So,
yeah, we had Larry Wall. You like that?
So, it's interesting.
I'm glad we got that guy. That was if you didn't see the Larry Wall talk, make sure to check it out on YouTube afterwards. So we're going to get started. This is the Lightning Network panel. This is the real Jameson Lopp joining us, and let's start with the
lies.
Exactly. Don't. You have to verify. Anyways, let's start with some quick intros. Just take about 20 seconds. I mean, people fairly know who you are, and so let's get to the
content. I may or may not be the CTO of a company called CASA that focuses on private key security and helping people run full nodes, and just in general being more sovereign unto themselves.
And Alan?
Yeah, so I'm the director of product at Blockstream, the company that's designed to control and destroy Bitcoin by the banks, or at least as some people say. So I've been at Blockstream since 2017, been in Bitcoin space since 2011.
And John?
Yeah, I'm Juan. I'm a co-founder and CTO of OpenNode, one of the first Lightning payment processors out there, and I joined Bitcoin 2 years ago.
So let's start off with just a little bit. What is Lightning? What is the killer use case of it? Why would I use Lightning as a primer? And maybe we can just take a couple minutes on
that. The TLDR is that blockchains are really crappy at doing high volume throughput and processing and meeting certain use cases, such as use cases for transferring tiny amounts of value. These blockchains, at least the public permissionless blockchains, are creating these global flood fill networks that are extremely inefficient, and that is by design. That's how we get a level of robustness that has never really been seen before. But then if you want to start doing even more inefficient things, it just doesn't scale very well. So the way that some people are trying to approach scalability of these systems is actually in a similar manner to how the internet itself was scaled, and that is by building additional layers on top of them, and those layers can provide the efficiency.
Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I would say the key idea is basically like the small and everyday transactions are not broadcasted to the blockchain, and you just broadcast the final settlement. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, and I guess it's worth noting, the two, that this was something that's, the idea has been around since the beginning of Bitcoin. On a more limited scale of just one part, parties to transferring with between each other, there were some broken parts of it that didn't quite work right, that did need some minor improvements. And then the real benefit of Lightning is not just having a single party that I can transact with, but transact through anyone throughout the network. And I think you asked too, is like, what is the killer application of Lightning? I think we're all waiting to figure out what that is. I don't think anyone in this room, whatever you think it is, it's probably wrong. There's a lot of things. So I think we have to look at what does Lightning do that we can't do otherwise. And so we started this with the Lightning satellite service Blockstream has. So Blockstream has satellites that we have access to that we stream down the Bitcoin blockchain. And we have bandwidth that we could use that we don't. And so what we did was we opened up a Lightning channel that you can pay, request invoices from, to broadcast any message you want from space to across the whole world. So literally someone paid money using Lightning to Rickroll the whole world. And I'm not going to say Rickrolling is the killer app of it, but what this does is, someone could have made a contract with us. They could have agreed for a certain amount of bandwidth. They could have, you know, done all this overhead to set up this relationship. But instead, all we had to do is just say, like, we have no idea who you are. We have no idea what you want to do. Send us money and we'll give you this. And it was cheap enough that, you know, they can take the risk. The worst case is they pay us a little bit of money and we don't rickroll the world. But the reality is, you know, someone can send this transaction. We can broadcast it in small chunks. We have no idea. There's none of that overhead of contracts and overhead. So any underutilized service or network where a wide number of people, where it's costly to form relationships with and contracts, or they're global and it's costly to deal with them if there's problems, has the potential to be the killer app for Lightning. So we're, you know, at Blockstream, I think we inspired a lot of people that had those services. And, you know, they've been coming to us and asking, oh, I've got this. How can I do that with Lightning? And that's pretty exciting. So I think we'll start to see maybe in the next year or two the killer apps showing up.
I have a quick follow-up question for you. You mentioned that, you know, Lightning, or at least Layer 2, or maybe Lightning idea was part of the first ideas, you know, since Bitcoin's been around. When was the first kind of mentions of, like, an L2? And because I know about Poon and Drudge kind of putting out that white paper in 2014, I believe. But what was the earliest kind of mentions of a Lightning idea? Where did that come from?
Satoshi's white paper, I believe, has it in there with the payment, the idea of having a sequence number and updating the channel state between people and having a final transaction that can be broadcast. There's some flaws in it.
Those are the early building blocks, right? Is that payment channels were actually first technically possible. Like, there was software to do payment channels as early as, I think, 2011 or 2012 with Bitcoin J. That was, like, Mike Hearn, Matt Corallo that wrote that. At the time, those were just from one person to another person. So I recall that payment channel technology made a bit of a leap in like 2014 or so, because there was like Streamium, I recall, was a service that came out. It was basically video streaming and you're paying in real time. But there were some big limitations to that, because you would have to directly open this on-chain transaction to the service and then it would just update that one channel. Lightning Network takes that basic building block and extends it by creating a network of payment channels. And so the trick was, how do you allow an intermediary node on the Lightning Network to hold funds in a way that they have to eventually send those funds forward to your final destination? And that basically involved a couple of new primitives in the protocol and a lot of game theory. And so as a result, you know, Lightning Network is, from a like a rules perspective, it's a lot more complicated. But that was necessary in order to create enough security that you could actually end up sending money through an arbitrary number of other nodes.
No, I agree. I think what we see here with Lightning Network is basically, like Lob said, a network of payment channels. It takes the use of something that was already made before, but we didn't find quite the usefulness of it, because we would need, after all, a direct connection with that party or the service you want to use. And here we can, in the network, people nodes can route payments in a trustless way, I would say, using Bitcoin smart contracts, basically. And you are sure that the payment is going to get there, otherwise you can claim the money back.
All right, thank you. So I have a question for all of you, and you can give your opinions or your expertise on this. What do you believe is the, in terms of the entire percentage of the scale pie, how large is the Lightning slice of Bitcoin scaling? And what, you know, you can also mention some other things that you think are prevalent with scaling, but in terms of scaling itself, how important is Lightning in that term, in those terms?
I mean, scaling is generally scaling is a tricky word, because there's multiple ways to scale. You can scale up or you can scale out. And so that's one of the reasons there's been a lot of divisiveness in the space, is because some people want to scale up and just, you know, put more data on the blockchain and let's continue on in a similar fashion. Scaling out tends to be more technically complex, but what you're trying to do is find efficiency gains. So there are a number of ways that we're trying to find efficiency gains in Bitcoin. One of those is by like reducing the amount of data that is going on the chain. You can do that in a number of different ways. Some that are coming down the line that are interesting are like signature aggregation, so that basically you can reduce the amount of signature data required to go onto the chain. But the way that I try to describe second layer solutions is that you're taking a lot of activity that, sure, you could just put it on the chain, but now you're taking it off and you're really just doing private transactions between each other, so that you are still putting some data on the chain, like at the beginning of opening a channel and at the end of settling, but all of the stuff in between, which nobody really cares about except the two people that are interacting, need to actually exchange that data.
I think the question is, how important is Lightning to that story? Right now, that is, I think, the best solution for doing those types of payments. There may be other layer two solutions that pop up and are possible. There may be new technologies that emerge that make Lightning completely irrelevant in 20 years. We just don't know at this point, but it's a pretty big part of the story for being able to bring Bitcoin from what's capable of now to what it can be capable of in the future.
Yeah, I think Lightning is the winning horse, I would say. We don't see yet another solution that can compete with Lightning.
Well, there's a ton of solutions that are possible. It's all about trade-offs, right? One thing that a lot of people don't like to talk about, but this is reality, is that a lot of Bitcoin scaling has happened because of custodial providers. That's another type of off-chain transaction, but most of us find that rather detestable because it means that we're just using trusted third parties and making trade-offs with security in order to get more scalability. So it's basically, Bitcoin banking 2.0. And there have been theories that even if Lightning and all the second layer solutions completely fail, we could always just scale, using these Bitcoin banks. It's certainly possible, but it would suck because of the security trade.
I think that would still be better, the alternative, because it would be much easier to create one than it is today with regulation. You could create one in any, environment that you needed to, and people could flock to it without necessarily living there. So it's a little bit better. I hope we're not in that situation. I hope Lightning is a much better answer. But something off-chain is going to have to be the alternative, and really how much goes on Lightning and how much goes on trusted third parties and how much goes on something like federated sidechains or merge mine sidechains. I mean, those are kind of
Chaumian banking systems.
Chaumian banking systems. I mean, there's lots of different trade-offs. It's going to move around based on usability and what people want and what they're willing to accept with these trade-offs. I think for the hardcore Bitcoin people that are paranoid and don't trust anyone and want to have control, Lightning's the best answer we've seen.
And I think also in regards to privacy, because Lightning offers a lot of privacy that you cannot have in a custodial services, obviously. They own the data. So it's not just about they are holding our funds or not. I think it's also about privacy, the fact that we only us know the data, what payments we are doing. So I think that's also important.
This would be maybe a quick response from all of you. If Bitcoin currently decides to keep the block size or the block weight what it currently is, I guess theoretically with all transactions being SegWit transactions, 4 megabytes, and then, everyone using paid public key hash would be maybe 1 megabyte. If we keep these limits the same, would Lightning Network be sufficient for all the users that would actually want to use Bitcoin right now, or would we need some other kind of scaling fee?
Yeah, so there's so many variables there, it's hard to break down, but... The short answer is, I think in any reasonable number of time frames and throughputs and whatever, then it would be very difficult, if not impossible, to onboard billions of people. Kind of one thing that I made a reference to before was aggregate signatures. Generally, like aggregation in general, there are multiple paths that people are working towards, and so that's where like the L2, ELTOO solution like multi-party payment channels are another type of aggregation where you could once again get more people into the second layer network with a smaller amount of data going on the chain. My personal view, and of course this is just me, and there are plenty of people who would attack me for saying it, is that I expect that we will continue to try to see people in the space making as conservative and creative protocol changes as possible in order to like squeeze out the maximum performance and efficiency of what is currently available. But I would hope that on the long-term scale, if we get to a point where there are like literally no more efficiency gains that anyone can think of, and it seems like hardware in general is decreasing the cost of running full nodes, that eventually it will become less contestable that perhaps allowing a little bit more data on the chain would be okay.
You have to get permission from Luke Dash Jr. first. Just kidding. Oh. Alan laughed so hard as... Oh, no.
It was Jameson.
Okay, never mind. You laughed so hard.
It was Jameson. I think the question, too, is, should it or could it scale to those levels? I think the most important thing is I think it was Andrew Pulsar who said it, is we can't afford to break Bitcoin. Like, that is the most important thing. And so if the choices are maybe we break it and be able to scale to everyone in the world and everyone's grandchildren that could ever exist, versus maybe we take a little bit more conservative approach, maybe there's a little bit more limits, but it stays safe, we have to err on that side. And so that means we stay within the bounds of technology. You know, I would be great if I could drive my car 300 miles an hour down the highway, but I'm going to do that, I'm going to endanger a lot of lives, and I'm going to kill a lot of people, and it's not a good idea. So I'm going to stay within reason of what's actually safe. And that's the principles we have to apply to Bitcoin. We can't base it on projected demand or what people are actually do. We have to base it on what the technology actually can do. And if there is an expansion of the block size, I really hope that there's some way to do it in a way that we never have to worry about this again, because just trying to, you're going to need everyone to agree to the change or else you're going to cause a split. It's just fact of the matter. You cannot change a system as long as there's enough people that are dead set on it. And maybe it's okay if a couple people stay on the the original path and go on, but it's a new thing at that point. So we want to be very certain that it has quite widespread support, much more support than anything has ever had up to this point that would have caused a split. And we've had these debates. It should be settled by now. We've seen Ethereum say we're going to make these changes, and then we've had a couple of hardliners say no, we're not, and there's a split. We've seen even with BCH, they say they're going to make a change, and a bunch of people say, no, we're going to make a different change. There's a split. And so causing splits is, I don't think, productive or helpful. So it's more important to make sure it's something conservative, and we don't have to face this problem ever again.
Yeah, I agree. It's way more harder to get consensus on the first layer rather than, you don't need consensus on second layer solution. And that's why I like it. The fact that you can try, if you break it, you don't break Bitcoin. You break this technology. Because Bitcoin is there, the first layer. So I think there are rooms for improvements on the second layer solutions before we even think about it, such as the fact that, like Lop was talking about, like the fact you can aggregate all channel openings in one single transaction. I mean, there are so many improvements that you can do at the second layer that we don't even need to think about it yet. Who knows what technology can come up tomorrow, another second layer technology. We never know. I think we should first, the approach, in my opinion, we should do is let's try to solve these in a second layer solution. Let's see how can optimize these as much as we can without breaking the first level, because if we break the first level, it's going to be hard. It's from there, we broke it. We broke Bitcoin, and it's hard to get a consensus on that. So,
thank you. So Jameson just mentioned something, L2, which, to be honest, I'm not very familiar with. And the L2, ELTOO. I believe you mentioned that will help with scalability on Lightning. Could we talk about a little, for people who don't know, what is L2? And anyone can take this. That feels comfortable.
I haven't actually run it myself, so you might be more familiar.
Maybe we can talk about it.
This was an improvement to Bitcoin. There's a white paper that was written by two of the engineers at Blockstream and one of the engineers at Lightning Labs. So if anyone's unfamiliar, there's kind of three implementations of Lightning. Blockstream has done one of them. There's another company called Lightning Labs that does another, and another company called Async that runs another implementation. And so if you're unfamiliar with how Lightning works, and basically it's a reactive security model where we have a state of channels. I say it's always me and you, so maybe I should be.
I'll be Alice.
Yeah, we've got, you want to be Alice?
Alice, right. Bob.
Alice and Bob.
Carol, right. And Dave, right? We got the four right here.
We're ready. I have to be Carol. Right. All right. So you have the channel state, and if Michael publishes something incorrect, something expired, is the opportunity to steal all the funds. Now, part of me, when I heard that, I was like, this is great. This is so much fun to just steal everyone's money when you try to cheat. Like, I'm very vindictive. So it was kind of exciting for me. And I think there's like some error message even. It's like, justice has been served.
Yes.
A bug
and,
has been
and
found.
And that's great. But then there's some realities of that that make it not so fun. And part of that is, let's say Michael's backing up his wallet and he's not as informed on Lightning as maybe he could be. And he accidentally has an old state and his computer dies and he goes and pulls back his old wallet. And now he broadcasts that state that says, this is the end. This is the last thing I know about. I want to close the channel. But he actually has a newer state. Guess who steals all the funds? Michael didn't really try to steal them. He just didn't know that that was a history. So that's a pretty big flaw, I guess you could say, in Lightning. And what L2 really does is it improves that situation, whereas if he broadcasts something incorrect, the worst that can happen is now we broadcast a newer one that says, no, 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 this is really the right one. So it's basically the process of you go to a judge, you have a court case, you say, look, here's my argument for why I should get the funds. And then there's some time for the other person to respond with an update. Fortunately, this is better than normal court cases because you have cryptographic proof that there was agreement on everything. And after some amount of time, that basically can settle it. So it's a much cleaner system. You don't have to worry about as much about backups. The other part about that it benefits is you can have the idea of what's called a watchtower. So if I'm not connected, a full node at all time watching the blockchain, I might not see someone try to broadcast an old state. And if I broadcast, so I might want to outsource that to someone else. And currently the way to do that, there's a pretty heavy amount of information that needs to be stored and updated to do that. And this simplifies it tremendously where a single basically claim can be, spend multiple different versions of it.
Yeah, because in the current model, we need to save all the states, right? So in this new model, all you need is the first and the last, which we will know which one is the correct one. So you have a big improvement on data there. So I think we'll see how that rolls out. Because we need a new input, right?
That's right. Yeah, there's going to be some changes to Bitcoin needed for this. Hopefully make it in kind of a bundle of a bunch of new updates that are going to be ready to go soon. Hopefully they don't get stalled or delayed. I don't think they break any secret ASIC technology, so they should be all right. But yeah, this is definitely important. And then one other thing to mention is this is not mandatory for everyone on the network. And so it allows for a gradual upgrade of the network as needed. So the people that know about L2 can use it, and the people that want to use everything else the same and talk to each other, they can. Or if I don't know about L2, I can open someone with who does, as long as they support the old model. So it's a very elegant way of upgrading the network.
So would that require like new opcodes in order to make L2 work? Is that what that means? Or
yeah, there's a new signature mode. So you basically can commit instead of. This is getting a little bit in the weeds, so I don't know how much everyone knows here.
Raise your hand if you're a technologist.
All right. So there's a couple of different ways. Whenever you spend a Bitcoin transaction, you're basically saying go point to some output in the past based on its transaction ID and its order. And you're saying this is the one I'm going to put as an input, and I'm going to sign that that's where it's coming from. And these are the rules I'm signing on the conditions to now spend it in the future. And so you can agree right now, currently, you can agree to say, I don't care where the money goes. I don't care what the other inputs are. You could say, I only care about this one input or this one output. Or I don't care about anything. This is basically changes it saying, rather than linking to a specific output, you're linking to a specific script. And you're saying, I don't care what that transaction ID is. I'll basically like go to anything of those, and that's what I'm committing to. So this is requires a little bit of change to Bitcoin. Hopefully I didn't misdescribe this too well, and I don't know how well you're following it, Jameson. I was hoping you would take this one for the team, but
no,
he's the engineer, so I was hoping he would get it. But.
I think what a lot of people learned about Lightning Network in 2014, 15, kind of like the theory and stuff, and don't really know how it's currently being implemented. In terms of like what's available right now in terms of watchtowers and what it will take to get L2 in and like how far we are off from some of these things, like for instance, is watchtowers being used right now just experimentally on main chain, or are we still off from that? Maybe we can talk a little bit about something like that and how L2 and watchtowers fall in terms of timeline of events.
I'm not aware of them being on the production network. No. I'm sure they are being used on test network.
At least on LMD, that's what I follow.
And then going into the future, so L2, again, we need this new input for the signature type, hash type for it. I believe it's going to be rolled into a change that covers a couple of other things that Jameson mentioned, like Taproot and Schnorr signatures, music, that will be kind of rolled up as an upgrade to the SegWit script version. Never want to promise any kind of timelines on when code's going to be delivered for Bitcoin, just because if someone finds a problem, it's going to be fixed rather than trying to like shove the release out to be, you know, Q4. But this is something I think it's getting pretty close, and then it's going to take rolling out to the network, and it's going to take, you know, how is it going to be activated? Is it going to be another miner activated soft fork through signaling, or is it going to be a timeline?
Flag day.
There's going to be...
Fuck it. Do it live.
There's still debate in the community of how we're going to do soft forks, because that whole process got kind of a little messed up in the last time it went out. So I think people are going to have to decide how it's going to be done even.
Yeah, I think meanwhile we'll have the channel backups first, which is something that I'm actually looking for. Because with this problem, the fact that we have this Justice TX that can spend all the funds if you broadcast a old state. So there is something coming. I think it's also coming soon. It's already being tested as well, is the static channel backups. So I think that will help a lot while we do this transition first.
So let's leave. So I have a question that kind of leads into another question that's relevant to what y'all are just saying. So first, I want to do some self-diagnosis here. How many Bitcoin do I need to lose on Lightning Network in order to be considered wrecked?
At least one.
Okay. So let's say maybe I bought like a little Raspberry Pi box and plugged it in and didn't back on my channel state. So I'm good. It was less than one, so I'm not wrecked. Would that be?
Oh yeah. I mean, I lost some a few weeks ago while I was testing, but it was only 0.01. So I can do that at least like another 99 times.
Nice. Now you know all of Jameson's Bitcoin amounts right now. He went live.
I think if I would have known I was going to be on this panel before I left for my trip, I would have brought my Reckless at. But if anyone knows the history of Reckless, basically we opened the Blockstream store on mainnet before there was really much else on mainnet, and got accused of being reckless by, I will say, an unnamed CEO of a company that is involved in Lightning. And, you know, people in this space that are going to be using this, there's a little bit of recklessness just of using Bitcoin. Anyone who's lived through the last hype cycle, I guarantee there's been a lot more money lost that way just by ups and downs than what's being lost in the Lightning Network. So
You didn't see my presentation yesterday, which was really the history of Bitcoin recklessness. But like one of the things that I try to impart upon people is that every time you make a transaction on chain in Bitcoin, you're destroying your money and recreating it. That's fairly reckless in and of itself.
Don't use Bitcoin. It's reckless. So previous, you're kind of talking about some of the things that need to be done in terms of improvements, but we'll see how you answer this. What are some of the biggest like misnomers, how people can lose money on Lightning Network, just not knowing really the tech and, you know, what people can do to prevent some of these, you know, loss of funds?
I mean, I think it's hard to prevent the loss of funds today because we don't have still the things, the channel backup thing. So, I mean, you can do RAID, yes, but that's too complicated. But basically what happens is if you have a system, an hard drive system failure or something, you are basically wrecked. That's why it's reckless.
And I want to ask a follow-up question to you real quick. Even if you have like your 12 or 24-word seed from that device that created, you're still wrecked if you don't have the channel database?
Yeah, because that seed allows you to recover the on-chain funds, not the channel funds. So that's exactly what I was talking about. So the static channel backups, is this mechanism that will allow you to retrieve as well the funds from your channels. So, but it's not ready yet. I don't know if anyone is using that on production, but I guess no.
So I do know a Clair wallet will back it up to Google Drive for you, but that's not like, I don't know. I don't know if that's the right solution or whatever, but it is a version of it, I guess.
Yeah, it needs to make sure it backs it up every time and didn't miss anything. So you need to, you know, double sure of that.
Hopefully you're not routing money through it, or it would.
Yeah, Clair does not route money.
Is it spend only?
Yeah.
That's why. So that's why it's feasible to do.
Gotcha. So if you receive, is there anything else that you want to hit on in terms of Lightning? Like, who's doing the best job in the Lightning space in terms of use cases and any, you know, things that you'd like to talk about? We can kind of do a free form before you do Q&A.
I'm a big fan of Lightning Koala. He's done some really cool stuff. Did he do the Pixel one too?
Satoshi's Place.
Satoshi's Place. Yeah. So that was pretty cool. Just paying to put a Pixel somewhere. You know, this has been done before, but never like this, where it's just a, you know, fraction of a penny to place a Pixel. And he's now doing things with chess. Yes, I tried to get him to do poker, but he rejected my idea. So that's a pretty interesting way that you can do things.
These are a lot of like cute little proof of concepts. I think like the more powerful thing is when we can really have like machine to machine streaming payments. The unlocking use cases for like pay as you go something, whether it's pay as you go bandwidth resources or pay as you go virtual private servers or some sort of other computation, where we can get rid of the like you have to pay a monthly subscription model, which may be orders of magnitude more than the actual usage you want. I think that actually enables us to unlock some new economies of scale with regard to just economic interaction and more efficiently.
Yeah, metered payments are definitely one of the big advantages or one of the opportunities I see with Lightning Network. And we can also use that on Bitcoin mining pools. We can pay out with Lightning. Like, we can pay out, as Lop said, as you go. So why do we need to send dust to the blockchain when they get paid out like small amounts of Bitcoin? Why can't I just Lightning and stream the payments right away? I think that's one interesting use case.
Yeah, definitely. I'm aware of some pretty big potential use cases as well. Unfortunately, can't share too much right now. But I think in the next year you'll see some things. What's that?
Give us the roadmap.
Well, it's not the roadmap. It's I know, that's the Bilderbergs. Yeah, no.
Rumor
no, there's definitely been a lot of interest from use cases I had never conceived of. Again, the underutilized network, the opportunity where I don't know who the customer is, nor do I care who they are to use it. So this is something that's, you know, looking forward, the quality of kind of stuff's cool and cute now, but this is going to be huge. And I think the B2B side is one that people are kind of missing in the space of where this could potentially go.
I did think of something else I did want to go to before we did Q&A. I guess this is the first question, because I'll ask it. But in terms of implementations of Lightning Network solutions, I'm familiar with C-Lightning or the Elements project. I'm familiar with LND. There's also probably like two other ones that are fairly popular. There's also stuff that I think Dryja is doing that is not even compatible with like the Bolt standard. You have like other kind of things going on. In terms of the landscape of this space, do you really feel like there's going to be like everyone's just going to be on the Bolt standard? It's going to be like different web browsers, or do you feel like there's going to be, you know, maybe you can kind of give your take on overlay. What do you think is going to be popular? What's easy to get into? What is one good for something? One's good for another, maybe?
Well, you know, that's one of the big differences between Bitcoin based protocol and Lightning, is that Lightning was actually developed as this like joint collaborative specification. So, you know, there were teams of developers coming together to decide upon a specification before they even started building the software. So, you know, at least from that standpoint, I think that it is going to be pretty entrenched in the Bolt specification. But the really cool thing is that because this isn't consensus, anybody can create their own other spec for other second layer networks. And it would be great to see other specs for other second layer networks come out if someone can think of some that are substantially different. Diversity in additional layers is going to be a lot less contentious, I think, than diversity in base protocols.
And that's what the MIT version is doing. They don't follow the bolt. They have their own protocol. So
I think there's an advantage to try to stay together as much as possible with getting adoption. If there were 5 Lightning networks right now, I don't think it would be anywhere near as popular as if there's one. This torch is going around. It's passing through people that are using. Some are using C Lightning. Some are using Async's version. Some are using LND. It doesn't matter. And they're connecting and paying over networks that are connecting with each other because interoperability and being able to connect through these routes, the bigger that network is that's compatible, the more successful it's going to be, and that network effect grows. So I think it's important that people try to stay together as much as possible unless there's a very strong need to do some feature that's just not possible or not compatible.
Did Jack pass off the torch yet?
Jack passed the torch.
To Stark?
I think he got give it to Stark.
Is that where it's sitting right now?
No, she gave it off to a couple people. It eventually made it to Samson, who sent it over the satellite after being Rickrolled. And then
last I heard, it was trying to get in China. Somewhere.
Yeah, they were trying to get to like China or Venezuela or Iran.
It's in Liberland right now.
But the idea with that torch is you increase the amount every single time by a little bit.
Yeah, so that eventually someone will exit scam.
And it's exit cammed once so far?
I think that person got shamed into submission. What is the opposite of exit? They enter unscammed, I guess?
They were pretending to exit scam just to
make
everyone
sweat. Just to get publicity,
sweat.
Gotcha. So when this thing gets to like a whole Bitcoin, you can send it to me.
It'll get to maybe 0.16. But they're going to start experiencing failures to send well before that just due to liquidity issues.
I did have one more. I'm sorry, guys. In terms of private Lightning implementations in public, is there any idea of you losing privacy if some of these networks kind of overlap? That's the way I say privacy now. Robin taught me. But is there any idea where you can lose some privacy I don't really know if you run it under Tor, this is a private Lightning version, there's going to be a public Lightning version. Do you see anything like that happening?
I mean, there's a lot of variables at play. One is, are you using, are your channels advertised or unadvertised? Another one is, are you on ClearNet or are you on Tor or some other privacy network? And then... In general, like the actual Lightning protocol itself is using this form of onion routing that is supposed to make it more difficult for network observers to figure out where things are going. But this is gonna become a whole other, facet to the analysis industry. It'll be interesting to see like if Chainalysis and other folks manage to have much success with trying to de-anonymize the network.
Set up a whole bunch of Lightning nodes and. See if they can try to...
Ellen Big, CIA.
Yeah,
today, maybe. I mean, what else would explain why someone would be so reckless as to put like 300 Bitcoin on a Lightning network?
Yeah, and today you can still identify a channel opening in the blockchain. But I think that will be...
It was the two-party ECDSA.
Going to basically hide. It's going to be like a normal Bitcoin transaction. So it will be even more difficult to track all this.
And I'm told that there are even some people that are trying to get like Mimblewimble Lightning network compatibility. So you never know. Maybe he was talking about interoperability, and if we do in fact see a number of different crypto networks that get hooked into Lightning network, then you could start swapping between Bitcoin and other privacy coins and. Hopefully mix your coins so well by basically like hopping chains that it's practically impossible to follow that.
Hey, real quick, if you do have a question, please come over here to Peter so we can streamline those questions. All right, so we'll have the first one right here.
So when you say you don't care who the customers are utilizing the Lightning Network, if you're a business, how do you get past the regulators demanding that you know your customers?
Well, AML KYC mainly is for financial services, right? As far as I know, if you're just like a regular business and you're selling widgets on the internet, then there are no like AML KYC regulations unless it's some sort of controlled substance like fireworks or something.
Yeah, in that case, you can still, the cost of doing AML KYC is one part of it. You still have contract negotiation. Where am I going to settle this lawsuit? How am I going to deal with this in the real world? Whereas if I'm getting paid as I go and I do my minimum, AML KYC stuff, that's good enough. So that's another part where you're still getting a benefit, even if you have to do those steps.
Well, that will possibly open up some interesting new legal and philosophical questions of, what happens if we build out a new economic network where anonymous machines are engaging in illegal activities with each other? We're going to throw them into like virtual private server jail or something?
Next question over here.
Yeah, so I actually met up with Taj a couple months ago, last time I was at MIT. He told me that what's Lightning now is not what he envisioned for Lightning when he wrote the paper. I don't know what that means. Do you guys have any idea?
Lightning?
What's not, in the Lightning
it's not,
paper?
It's not lit AF enough. Does anyone know what he's done?
All I know is there were some improvements over the HTML contracts, so like in terms of payment routing. I don't know if he's talking about that or he's talking something more philosophical. I have no idea.
Yeah, so, I mean, the interesting thing about kind of the formation of Lightning Network was this paper basically got tossed over the fence, and I think it was Taj and Poon basically said, like, hey, here's an interesting idea. If someone wants to run with it, go. And it wasn't until I think Rusty was the first one that really started working on actually implementing it and explaining it. And then at that point, others did join. But yeah, it was kind of wasn't really implemented. And the white paper is great; it can inspire and do a lot of things. But when you actually rubber meets the road, sometimes you have to deviate a little bit or things have to change. And so I wish I knew what the specifics were that he thinks is not in his true vision or not correct, but sometimes you have to just alter things based on reality.
Well, I mean, we maybe we'll end up with the Lightning Network : Taj's vision.
There'll be a separate network.
But these public permissionless protocols, it's actually, I think it's good when they exceed and grow beyond the initial creator. And I would say that's even true for any open source project, is if we're trying to build things that are going to really be multi-generational, like global mainstream technologies, then they should not be dictated by any single individual. They really need to become more of this collective, collaborative project. And so that's why it's been kind of funny to see so many arguments about Satoshi's vision for Bitcoin. Who gives a fuck what Satoshi wanted? He left the project. If he wants to contribute, no one can stop Satoshi from contributing. Maybe Satoshi still is contributing, but under some sort of other alias or pseudonym, or perhaps they are using their real name and we don't know who Satoshi is. It doesn't matter. Satoshi no longer has any more weight in this community than any other contributor. And I think that should be the truth really for any of these systems, is that if we want them to be fair, then we need to accept input from anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Who gives a fuck who Satoshi is? Yeah. Next question right here.
Could you, any of you, elaborate more on the B2B use cases for Lightning Network, especially when B2B payments are generally significantly larger and more subject to KYC AML regulations?
Yeah. So the limit that's in Lightning right now is a soft limit. It will and can be broken when it's ready. So, right now, the network is in its early stages, and you know, we don't want to have people losing money. And so it's a nice way to do it. You can, if you wanted to, get rid of that limit and do whatever you wanted and be even more reckless than people are today. And the use case here, yes, more greater payments are there. You can still KYC AML. It's not incompatible with that. You still can like know who's actually paying you. You just don't have to worry about it. So international payments, anything where there's kind of services that are done internationally, this really lights up a lot of stuff because, you know, right now there's a lot of fraud in many industries where you're getting paid when you have to have interconnected services between multiple regions. So if some guy in Estonia wants to use my service, he has no good way to pay me. He doesn't want to just prepay me a lot of stuff. I'm not going to accept his credit card payment because there's like a 50%, you know, chargeback risk there. He's not going to want to just like wire me money that's like for what he might pay in the future, and he may never do business with me again. But I can collect his information. I can verify he's a real person or he has a real company. And that's easy. That's the easy part of this whole thing. So it's something where it will open up these use cases that just weren't possible right now. And you have these like networks of trusted third parties where like, I'll trust Jameson, but I don't know anyone else. Jameson trusts a few people and eventually makes its way around. It kind of looks like Lightning Network in a lot of these cases. And you know, you kind of have banking working like that today with correspondent banking where it's like, if I want to route money from the United States to, you know, Zimbabwe, maybe that's a bad example, but somewhere that actually is functional, but still remote, you know, we have to go through these layers of correspondent banking because you have to find the people that really trust each other because they're, you know, if they don't trust each other or something bad happens, someone's out money. And with Lightning, you're getting paid. You know you're getting paid. So the KYC problem, I think, is easy compared to the problem of payment settlement.
From a technical standpoint, I actually talked about this in a blog post that I made yesterday. It was buried in the Satoshi Roundtable post, where I actually think that B2B payments are incredibly important for Lightning Network to help realize some of those efficiency gains I was talking about. I posted a chart that was showing sort of fund flow on the Bitcoin network and basically talked about my experience at BitGo, where BitGo is this non-custodial wallet that backs a lot of enterprises. And so BitGo has some interesting insight into the flow of funds between like popular exchanges and other stuff. And we would look and try to figure out, like, is there a way that we could reduce the number of on-chain transactions that our customers are doing with each other, because they don't even know, like, they're just sending to a Bitcoin address. You know, our customer A doesn't know that they're sending it to our customer B. They're just sending to a Bitcoin address. And so this would happen thousands of times a day, basically, of money going back and forth and back and forth redundantly, where if they had been doing it with payment channels, especially through Lightning Network, all of that redundancy would have been kind of hidden under the hood and taken care of. That's really what Lightning does, is it helps you reduce the redundancy of just moving these values back and forth on the public ledger. So I think that enterprises are going to be helpful both for that like efficiency use case and also going to be important for the liquidity aspect of helping the rest of the people on the Lightning Network to be able to manage their own channels. But that's one of the biggest, I think, outstanding questions about Lightning Network is sort of the economic implications and liquidity management and all of that. And we get liquidity questions all the time from our users who are running Lightning nodes. And right now, we generally have to say, we don't know. We're trying to figure it out, and you're helping with part of the experiment.
Yes, I am.
Thanks.
did you want to comment on B2B or anything?
Yeah, B2B. You have a simple example, exchanges, for instance. If you want to move the funds really quick, you can use Lightning or Liquid, for instance. So there are definitely use cases for B2B because you couldn't move money as fast as you do with Lightning before. So that might be an advantage for some kind of business.
I do want to say we are almost out of time. I know there's a couple more people that want questions. If we do very, very quick, concise answers, we can probably get a couple more people. Can we try to do that real quick? And please make your question pretty brief as well.
Thanks. I'll be brief. From a user's perspective, do you see any new innovative devices coming out for Lightning Network, and how do you think Lightning Network can advance the mass adoption by gaining more users to the network?
Yeah, so right now, I guess I missed the beginning part, but basically adoption, how do we make it easier to use? Right now, there's a lot of manual steps involved in trying to figure out how do you route channels, how do we set up liquidity, how do we make payments. The ideal situation is you can be able to pay your full channel capacity to anyone you want at any time, I think. And you do that where you don't have to manually configure anything. So if I'm sending something over the internet, I don't have to know, like, go hop at this stop, go stop at this stop, go hop there, and then eventually you're over to the website. It just happens. And so I think with time, as we learn how it evolves, these things will become more and more automatic and more transparent to the end user. And the ideal is you have a wallet, and it can send Bitcoin to Bitcoin address, Lightning endpoints, invoices, whatever you want, and you have no idea what's going on. It just figures out whatever is best for you.
Yeah, I think that the channel concept will be abstracted to the user later on. And you will have, like, fiat on-ramps like you have today for Bitcoin. You can just top up with your card, and suddenly you are on the Lightning Network, be able to transact. So, yeah, I mean, we are still in the very early stages, I would say. We are still figuring out backup solutions, so.
and let's take the last question right here.
Do you guys have any phone apps that you would suggest for us to download in order to open up payment channels that you guys endorse, like Blue Wallet or like RawTX for the different platforms?
Blue Wallet's the custodial one, right?
Yeah. I think Jameson's going to endorse that one.
So, you know, ultimately, it very well may be the case that custodial Lightning wallets gain more traction early on. Custodians in general are able to abstract away complexities a lot more easily because they control everything. In the long run, though, you know, myself and a lot of the other hardcore decentralist sovereign folks will be working on trying to make it easier for the average person. But I like to think that Casa's browser extension coupled with our node works pretty well.
I'm a much worse shill than Jameson. I can't. I'm so bad. I can't even remember the name of it. But there's a project we sponsored that basically lets you have a like front end for your phone that you can use to connect to the back end. Do you remember what it's called? Does anyone remember? Spark. Spark. Maybe I don't. I'm gonna get in trouble for not remembering this. But yeah, that's another one that we have that lets you connect to your own node. It gives you that full sovereignty. But
does Zap have a mobile like version?
No, they don't have because Neutrino is not.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, but there are a couple of wallets. I would say for iOS, you have custodial wallets. You have Zap, which is you need to connect to your full node, though. I don't know. If you're a tech person, you should be able to do it fairly easy. For Android, you have more friendly. I would say you have Eclair and BLW, Bitcoin Lightning Wallet, where you can receive, I guess. And I think that's pretty much it right now.
But is there... is there a Lightning site that lists all these, like Bitcoin.org does with wallets?
Was it Lightning.tech or something?
There's lnroot.com. I think they have a lot of resources. There are a couple of websites. Lightning Hood, I think.
Okay.
You'll have to add it to lop.net/Bitcoin.
There is a Lightning section on lop.net where I'm sure if you click enough links, you'll eventually get to one of those.
Can we please get a round of applause for our panelists? Thank you.